Our gospel reading this morning comes from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 12, verses 1 through 12. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for this child, and when you have found him, bring me word, so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went a star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chest, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So this morning we think about this visit by these strangers from the east. We call them kings, we call them magi. They were probably people who watched the night sky and were probably nomads in some ways all the time. So they watched the sky carefully, and at some point they discovered that some new star had appeared in the area that they normally watched. We're not sure if the time between when the magi saw the star and arrived to see Jesus was 12 days or 20 days or 2 years. We don't know how long it took for this journey. But they had come from some distance away. So when they arrived closer to the place where they thought they might be headed as they followed the star, they checked in with Herod, the king. The kind of thing you do when you're going into someone else's territory. You don't want to be caught and shot, although they wouldn't have shot them, but they would have been beaten or they would have been harmed if they hadn't gone straight to the king and met with him before going any further. So they asked the king about this new person, this child that they had heard was being born. They were wise. They had studied different cultures before they arrived where they were going. And they knew that there had been the prediction of this child who would be king. So they wanted to go find what it all meant. They talked to Herod. Herod talked to the people he knew, and they said, "It seems like it might be over here. And please come back and report to me if you find this child, because I will want to visit him as well." So these people who were traveling together, we say it was three, partly because there were three presents that are listed. So we really have no idea how many people were part of their entourage, but they had been traveling along, and they decide they're going to Bethlehem. It wasn't their plan when they started out. They were nomads. They followed wherever the stars led them. But they might have had an idea where they wanted to go. It's kind of like on this part of the journey, after they left Herod, they were kind of leaving behind their GPS, their maps, and that sort of thing, and just taking on faith that this star and the words of Herod would get them where they wanted to go. And suddenly they find themselves visiting with Mary and Joseph and their son, Jesus, who by this time might have been a toddler. He may have still been an infant, but there they are. And they share of their gifts, the things that they had with them on the journey, great wealth for Mary and Joseph, extravagance that they never would have dreamed of. And then when they finish their visit, they get up and they leave to return home, ignoring Herod's plea to stop by and tell him about their visit. They were told to go by a different way in a dream. How many of us look up to the sky to see the stars and are captivated by what we see? How extraordinary it was that they were able to pick out this new star that appeared amongst the thousands upon thousands that they probably would have seen. The skies are a great source of mystery and revelation to us. I know whenever John and I are away from the city, when we're maybe camping or out somewhere further away from the light pollution that comes from our typical habits as humans, I am amazed at what I see in the sky. And the mystery just captivates me. Looking up and seeing those pinpricks of light breaking through that which seems to be empty is amazing. But what we know now, through science and discovery, is that it's not a vast emptiness out there with just little pieces of light, but there is all kinds of matter and things that we can learn about ourselves and about the universe if we open our eyes and study. Vera Rubin just died a couple of weeks ago. She was a trailblazing astrophysicist who discovered dark matter. She figured out one of those things that was out there in the universe that has changed the way that people study the sky since she figured it out. She said, "Don't shoot for the stars. We already know where they are. Shoot for the space in between, because that's where the real mystery lies." She worked her whole life to peel back the mysteries of the dark sky. Life's like the mystery, like the mysterious travelers of Jesus' time, she was drawn by the sky into this life of discovery. We all have places that are mysterious in our lives. We all have those moments when we have to choose to focus on what we know or on what we don't know. Her encouragement to us is to choose what we don't know to begin learning more. We call this season of the church year, these days after which the visitors have been with Jesus and seen him and then gone on their way, we call this season Epiphany. Traditionally, it's known as the time of revealing of Christ and who Christ is. In the Bible study class this morning, we talked about the baptism of Christ, where again God comes and says, "This is my Son, the Beloved. With him I am well pleased." A revelation to the people who are there of who Jesus is and is to become. This season of Epiphany is a chance for us to learn something new again about ourselves and about the world around us, when things that have been hidden in the past suddenly become revealed and open to our eyes, if we have eyes to see. I imagine each of us has had times in our own lives when we've experienced an epiphany, a sudden recognition where things that had been murky or unclear suddenly make sense. When we say, "Aha, now I understand." Some of you have been teachers, many of you are parents, and have watched your children grow and learn. I remember one day when I was working with some kids after school, and there was one particular girl that I was working with, and we were doing our homework, her homework, a few years ago. And we were doing math, and we were learning. She was in first grade. So we were doing addition and subtraction. And her lesson that week was about the notion that zero added or subtracted from something doesn't change what you started with. So we were using our fingers and we were doing this plus this and this plus that. And suddenly, after going through it for 10 or 15 minutes with her, you could see the light bulb go off in her eyes as she began to understand that zero in addition or subtraction didn't change what you started with. She had a moment of epiphany that made her life much easier as she took math class, I'm sure, during second grade and third grade and fourth grade, because she didn't have to think about it and figure it out anymore. She had an epiphany, a new understanding of reality, as we were working together that day. Edwina Gately is a theologian and a missionary and a storyteller, and she shares a story of her experience with a man who was living on the streets in a city where she was working a few years ago. He was an alcoholic. Clearly, the first time she met him, he was in the late stages of alcoholism. He was just sort of sitting on the sidewalk, not really attending to who she was, not showing any interest in getting to know her. And she just kind of wrote him off as she walked by and went on to do the other things that were part of her planned day. She really thought there was no hope for him. After a while, though, he began to see what she was doing, and she would walk by him on a regular basis. It wasn't like she ignored him. She talked to him every day and told him a little bit about what she was doing, but she didn't try very hard with him to get him to be any different than he was. She really said to herself, well, he's an alcoholic. He's been an alcoholic for a long time. Clearly, he doesn't want to make any changes in his life. And so she sort of wrote him off, but she was still friendly and had a relationship with him. At some point, he began to become sober on particular days of the week when he knew what she was going to do was go talk to young teens and young women who were in danger of becoming part of the prostitution culture in that community. And he would put on clean clothes, and he would get up and he would go with her. She didn't invite him, she didn't deter him, but all of a sudden he began to change how he lived so that he could be part of this outreach to these young women to help them have a different life. He thought of himself as her co-pastor. He became more and more sober as the days went, and as he found things to be engaged in, as he had this relationship of friendship and love with this woman. One day they were walking along and she saw in a trash heap on the curb a table leg that caught her attention because it was beautifully carved. And she said, oh, let's go look at this. And they pulled the table out from this pile of trash and they set it up. And it had been painted many times. You could tell it hadn't been treated very well, but these legs were so beautifully carved. She really was taken by this piece of furniture that had been tossed aside. And the man said to her, "Listen, I can restore this. Give it to me. I'm going to take it, and I'm going to work on it." And he worked, and he worked, and he worked, and he scraped off layer after layer after layer of paint and got down to the wood and then was able to refinish it. And it was a beautiful table made from oak that clearly had been made by hand with great love and attention to detail. And he gave it to her. And in a lot of ways, that's what had happened to the man. He had been scraped down and scraped down until he had been renewed and restored as a person, a child of God. By this time, he had found a place to live. He was off the streets. It wasn't fancy or anything, but he was off the streets. Ultimately, he died of a heart attack there in his small apartment. And when he was found, he was grasping a piece of paper on which he had written, "Next of kin," and then a dash, and it said, "Edwina," this friend that he had made over time. The person who had said, "I don't see transformation possible in this person's life," who had given up on him before he even really started with her. And yet, because of her kindness and caring, he had been transformed. Somewhere along the way, these two had become family. Somewhere along the way, the face of God shone through this man, the alcoholic who was too far gone to worry with and to try to change. Somewhere along the way, this man, who was not worth a lot of effort, became a brother to Edwina. He was changed, and she was too, through this relationship. And at some time along the way, I suspect that each of them had an epiphany, a moment of clarity when they saw in one another the way that God is in us and through us. They realized they were family. Their masks were gone. Their fears were gone. They were open to seeing one another for who they really were, a child of God. That can happen to each one of us at any given time, because each of us is a child of God. Sometimes we forget, particularly when the outside doesn't seem to match what we would expect to see in someone who was a beloved child of God. But indeed, each of us is. In this season of Epiphany, these short, dark, cold days, the light increases day by day. We have longer and longer periods of sunlight. And during those extra minutes, why don't we spend time looking for the child of God in each one we meet? Let us spend time sharing the good news with people we're not sure can even hear it. Let us spend time loving one another as if there is no end to the well of love upon which we draw. God has shared love with us. We've seen it in the baby that we celebrate, whose birth we've just been celebrating. We see it in the children around us. We see it in one another as we reach out in comfort and care. Let's look for it in the places between the stars. Let's look in the mystery to find greater and greater love for God's people. God brings us new things time and again. So let us be thankful and give thanks to God. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.